are back for our eighth interview on our podcast, Home Mat Advantage. I am not Sam Herring, but instead Jude Swisher, joined today by a very, very special guest. He's a three-time NCAA All-American, two-time NCAA finalist, Big 12 champion, and I saw on your Twitter it says you're a 2020 Olympic hopeful. Everybody, we're interviewing Bryce Meredith. Bryce, how are you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. I actually just moved out to New Jersey to, like you said, right? It says 2020 Olympic hopeful. And just kind of where I was with my wrestling career and really just the lack of freestyle that I've wrestled throughout college. Like, of course, I grew up wrestling freestyle, but like I did at the highest level with college guys, I just needed a change, really. Like, really, I needed a drastic change. And here at the NJRTC, we have Reese Humphrey that's, you know, a full-time freestyle coach where every single day it's a freestyle team, obviously included with college guys as they come and go and depending on if we're with Rutgers or Princeton that day. But ultimately, we get to do freestyle moves all day, every day. And
yeah,
where I was is that's what I needed. And I needed that change. I needed a coach who, you know, that's his responsibility is making me the best freestyle wrestler that he can. So I know I probably just kind of jumped into some questions, but like, you know, when we say 2020 Olympic hopeful and how we're doing and what's going on, it's obviously brand new. I've only been here for a couple weeks and it's truly just been an incredible time so far. And I can really just feel myself growing as a freestyle wrestler every single day.
Yo, that's awesome. So you said that you didn't wrestle a whole lot in freestyle in college. Did you do more like in high school and in youth?
Yeah. So, but it's kind of funny because I would go to Fargo and then I wouldn't wrestle another freestyle match until I'd go to Fargo again. So like there wasn't really a lot of freestyle practicing. It was just that I was just a good wrestler. And, and I mean, of course I grew up wrestling it. So I had good knowledge for the high school level or whatever. So, I mean, I was a three-time All-American at Fargo. I went 7th, 5th, 3rd. So I was a good enough wrestler that I just thought, oh, freestyle. You just let it, you know what I mean? It's almost the exact same thing. You just change a couple mindsets and then you're good to go. But
yeah,
on the senior level, people get very, very specific in the freestyle game is kind of what I'd say. And the game that starts getting played is you gotta really understand it and you gotta be willing to fight in positions that, like, I don't know, I just wasn't really ready to fight in because, like, my style is I shoot a lot, I move a lot, I just want to get into wrestling matches pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm not somebody that likes to stand around a lot, and that can work very well in freestyle if you get to that point. But for me, it's like I shoot and I stay down low because in folk style, if you come up high most of the time, people start scrambling and funking and diving at your ankle. So everything's kind of done lower level on the mat. But it's like in freestyle, when I do that, I get head pinched or I get, you know, crotch lifted or the front headlock position just in general is really tough for somebody that shoots a lot. That's, you know, you got to learn how to recover out of that. And I mean, I said it last year that I was getting better at it and I was recovering and learning how to wrestle in those freestyle positions. But ultimately, I just don't think I was mentally where I needed to be to like actually make the change into freestyle last year.
Yeah.
So I was
When did this mental change happen? Like in this past year, do you remember a specific time or an event that happened?
Yeah. I mean, I think I had like, you know, glimpses of change throughout the year. You know, I'd get real ambitious and really like fall in love with freestyle and really go after it. But I don't think I actually truly changed until like 3-4 weeks ago. I mean, like you got to become very honest with yourself in the fact. And I look back on it and I think when I got beat by Yanni in the finals, you know, that was really heartbreaking. And then also like your college wrestling career is done and you've kind of like waited for the light at the end of the tunnel. Not that like I'm wanting my wrestling career to be done, but you kind of like a relief comes off of you. And then I started making good money during wrestling clinics and all these kind of stuff. And I ultimately just kind of like, not like lost the love for it, but I was just kind of removed myself from the competition aspect a little bit. I think there's like so much ego has to go into being a successful wrestler. And it's kind of like training almost in a sense that like you have to be selfish towards a lot of things because that's the only way to become the best, right? And
right.
It's hard to be selfish when you're not really a selfish person in that direction, but you have to do it to try to become the best wrestler. You got to be training. It's your schedule. It's your eating. It's this. So like when I did that, and I think when you do have a heartbreak or whatever, that's literally like your ego breaking. And then it's like, you now have to go into that to figure out more about what's going on and how you need to fix it. And I think sometimes you just kind of want to break from it. And as much as I said that I was good and I was training and I liked it and I was excited about freestyle, I honestly don't think I was believing it. Or, you know what I mean? My actions are following my words as much as they have in the past, because I wasn't being like deceitful by any means. I wasn't like running around, jumping around, talking about how much I love freestyle and how much I love the transition. But when people would ask, I'm like, oh yeah, it's good. It's going good. I'm hitting the transition. Everything's going great. But then I'd be like, not really. I'm not really enjoying it. There's a lot of parts in freestyle that I'm just kind of like, I'm not convinced it's the best way of a wrestling style, which in a different argument, if everybody wants to switch to freestyle, I'm on board for it, right? For high school and college. But I still don't think that just means that freestyle is superior. It's just what is done on the world level. So I'm fine with changing it, you know, is more how it is. And then I don't know. I just think it's funny how most of us spend 8-9 months of every single year wrestling folk style, spending all time in folk style positions on top, bottom, and in certain types of scrambling positions and stuff. And then people do freestyle for like 2 or 3 months and they're just like, nope, freestyle is the best. Freestyle is the best. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I don't really know where it comes
from. You're right.
Yeah, I don't really know where the like elite mindset about freestyle comes from, but it's here. And I mean, obviously there's no more folk style for me. So it's something that I have to just be willing to, you know, take control of.
Yeah. So you wrestled did you wrestle a senior level match like not too long ago, right? Like sometime last year.
Yeah, so I wrestled in the Dave Schultz, and I got third there. Wrestled okay, you know, kind of getting back into the freestyle. And then I wrestled in the U.S. Open, and the U.S. Open at 65 kilograms was honestly just like insane, right?
It was bonkers.
So like I checked my first kid in my first match, and then my second match was against Ironman, and I started out the match with a four point move, so you know I was feeling pretty good, pretty confident, and just kind of started, you know, shooting as I always do because I just got a 4-point move. So I was like, oh, dude, I'm gonna freaking slam him on his head again, you know. And if anybody knows, like the more you wrestle with Ironman, the more you shoot, the more it'll probably go into his favor. So
yeah,
got a little in my head there, and I ended up getting cradled and pinned, which you know how freestyle is, like pins just come or wait.
Yeah,
it's weird how. Just getting teched and pinned is like so much more normal than it would ever be in folk style. And then I go on the backside. So I'm on the loser's side of 16, right? So like very, very close on the backside. And I have Montel Marion, who's an NCAA finalist. And I beat him. And then my next match was against Joey McKenna. And it was really just a crazy position, right? So it was me, Joey McKenna, and Frank Molinaro. And two of us were not placing. So
I know, right?
It's like, insane. I mean, like, so it's really intense. Like, and I got really hard on myself, but I was kind of also like, yo, you know, you lost to Jane Ironman, who's, you know, a very good freestyle wrestler. And you lost to Joey McKenna, who was in Final X Finals last year. So you've got to keep it in perspective. And then it was really like my second, third freestyle tournament of the, you know, in the last 6-7 years.
How much freestyle were you training like up to the U.S. Open?
Yeah, the U.S. Open, I trained good. You know what I mean? I did a real nice 6-7 week cycle. I was feeling incredible, to be honest. Like, and that's kind of what I said. Like, I think I had like, you know, glimpses of like pursuing freestyle and like and really enjoying it, or whatever. But I got to spend more time than, you know what I mean, the time that I was at the moment.
No, for sure, for sure. So, what was your biggest takeaway from the U.S. Open coming out of there?
It's kind of a lot. I mean, ultimately, so for me in folk style wrestling, I just made it a 7-minute fight. Like we're just right. gonna be in a 7-minute. I'm gonna shoot. I'm gonna. And if I don't score, and you want to scramble, and you want to roll around for a minute, then we'll do it. And then I'll do it again. And then I'll do it again. And a lot of people, for me, like what I could tell college wrestling is, you put somebody in a wrestling match through that first period, that first 3 minutes, you can instantly see in their eyes, like, crap, I'm not ready to for 7 minutes, because it's just hard. You know what I mean? It's just hard to like get in those positions, and it's like emotionally draining when you lose scrambles, or if you, you know, whatever. And so like for me, that's where I was very successful in, is just putting people in deep waters and forcing them to wrestle for 7 minutes straight. But in freestyle, what I learned is it's more of a game, right? You kind of have to play the finesse game. You have to play careful and out of bounds. You have to be careful with not shooting in, because you can get thrown for four, right? Like you can give up 4 points on almost nothing, it feels like.
Right.
And, you know, that's like that was one of the things I at the U.S. Open. I mean, I went 2-2 and I got taken down one time. And in those two matches, I got teched once and pinned once. And I only gave up one real takedown, I think is what it was. Like, you know, I shoot on your legs, I take you down type of takedown.
Yeah.
The rest just came from rolling and getting spun and thrown or whatever, you know. And I was kind of like, it's kind of weird, because like it also doesn't hurt as bad, because normally when you lose in folk style, it's because you just lost a 7-minute war.
Right.
In freestyle, you kind of just get rolled around and you're kind of like, that's it. Like that was the match.
Yeah.
We got a fight or anything. So
exactly. For me, like, you know, even getting teched in folk style, you're like, man, something, you know, that guy is so much better than me. And then you get teched in freestyle and it's like, he may or may not have been better than me. He just took me down and ankle laced me 4 times. And then that's that.
So, exactly. So like for me, it was kind of weird, cause like I was really hurt, but then I also was like, I don't really feel like I got beat in a, you know what I mean? I didn't feel like I got to feel like the pain of like somebody literally just whooping your butt for 7 minutes straight. So, for me, the biggest takeaway was just truly, you just got to learn how to play the freestyle game, and you got to choose things more wisely, which I've never been a guy like that. Right. Like, obviously I mean, you can look to even like how I lost in NCAA finals. It's because I'm just like not the most wise wrestler. Like I could have probably just stalled out and won the match, but instead I'm like shooting in on shots and stuff like this. Sometimes I just get really caught up in the fight, you know, which ultimately I think made me the good wrestler that I am, is because I was just like, care about winning or losing positions. I just know that I'm going to win more positions than you in the 7 minutes. But in freestyle, like you can't do that, because those positions will cost you too many points.
Right. Right. So what do you think your next competition is going to be?
Shoot, man. It's so hard. This whole senior level stuff's kind of weird, you know? Obviously we'll have like the Bill Farrell coming up and the US Open. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not sure, cause everything's Olympic year, so everything's way different. The US Open being in December. Mm-hmm. And then, There's a big part of there's one, I think they're going to Russia to the Lons, which would be an option, but it's a really, really tough tournament. And if you know how those international tournaments work, if you go out there and you lose one match, you're normally done.
Yeah.
You can just go 0-1, and it's kind of a lot. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of energy for, you know, something to maybe just like not fall in your way. Like so many dudes, we go on these international trips and so many people go 0-1, and it's kind of a lot, where it's kind of like now, especially with being out here in Jersey, like I could wrestle matches with, it could be me versus Ashnell, me versus Kaladzic, me versus Seriano, me versus anybody from UPenn, right? Like Joey McKenna and all those guys, we could do that. I've worked out with NYRTC guys, so it could be like me and Evan Henderson, and like I could literally do like a 5-6 match tournament here if we really wanted to set it up.
Yeah.
That would probably be much better for me than going overseas. But I also do want to go overseas if it works. So hopefully something's going to the World Championships, obviously not for me, but we leave for Germany tomorrow and we'll be there for a week for the acclimation camp. And then we'll go to the World Championships in Kazakhstan. So I think that'll be just a really good learning experience, watching it, being around it, being overseas again. And I think that can kind of, you know, take place of almost one of my overseas tournaments, even though it's not my tournament at all.
Right. So, hey, let's change the topic a little bit and let's talk about you, like where you grew up and stuff. So where were you born and where did you grow up?
Yeah. So I was born in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and it's where I grew up. I moved a little bit when I was a kid, but not really anything that I truly remember. So almost all my life and memories have came from Cheyenne, Wyoming, which is the capital of Wyoming. It's more of a city, like the metropolitan area, if you want to call it that. It has like 90,000 people in it. So for Wyoming, that's the largest metropolitan area in the state, because as a state, there's only 500,000 people. So it's very, very small. And you know, growing up there, obviously I wasn't around the greatest partners all the time. So like that's one part. That here, one sec, I'm gonna go ask my roommate to turn his music off.
All right, no problem.
That was Pat Downey for all the listeners.
Pat jamming Downey. Out. Yo, I want to get Pat Downey on the show. That'd be cool.
Absolutely. He'd probably love to do that.
Awesome. All right. But, yeah, you were talking about you didn't have the best partners growing up in Wyoming.
Yeah, you know, and like obviously there was tough guys and stuff, but it's not like growing up in PA or Ohio or Jersey or anything like that. So for me, like I had to travel a whole bunch and I had to kind of figure out different ways to, you know, become a top level wrestler. And I think ultimately it helped me because mentally I had to kind of like wrestle with a lot of different things, you know what I mean, struggles of not getting the partners that you need and being in these areas that are just so not populated. Population like density is just not there. So that was one aspect of it. And ultimately, like I think I just learned so many different walks of life, right? So like wrestling is very, very diverse. You have all types of people from all walks of life that are in wrestling and are successful in it. And I think that's another reason that wrestling is one of the best sports in the world, is because I don't want to do this, but like the idea of like racism and like, you know, people being rich and people being poor and all that kind of stuff really doesn't matter that much to us, because we know at the end of the day, like it's just who's the better wrestler. And in life, it's kind of like, who's just the better person, right? Like, you know, not like better at winning, but just better at life and being a person and having these things. And I think like through wrestling, I had all that. And I traveled around the country and I had all these incredible experiences with so many incredible people that truly opened my eyes to a lot of different walks of life. Yeah, and then also like being in Wyoming, I've seen so many walks of life that are very, you know, tough in the sense of like ranching and farming and these like more like mountain type of people that a lot of people don't get to see those types of walks of life too. So I honestly love where I grew up, but with wrestling being involved with it. I think if it wasn't, you know, if there was no wrestling, then obviously it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think everywhere's more the same than it is different. And that's, I tell people, there's good freaking people everywhere, but there's bad people everywhere. At the end of the day, like if you put yourself around the good people that are striving to become the best humans they can through school, work, art, whatever, like your life's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can definitely say that some of the best people I've ever met, you know, surrounding the sport of wrestling, or, you know, wrestling really has a certain quality of like a down to earth. And, you know, you learn very early on, like that it's a tough sport and it's a grind, and the people who make the right decisions and apply themselves to their sport, they're the ones who are going to succeed. And, you know, that it makes you look at yourself and think, I want to be as good as those guys. Am I willing to make the changes they do? So, you know, wrestling's, it's difficult in that sense. And also like you were saying, about how Wyoming is, you know, it may be around like harder careers, so like farming and ranching and things like that, and wrestlers as a whole, you know, collective, we know the importance of just putting your nose to the grindstone and doing the hard work. So that's really, really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me a little bit about you, man. I don't really know much about you.
Oh, yeah. So
give me a little rundown.
So, okay. My name is Juice Wisher, and I live in State College, Pennsylvania, which is the location of Penn State. I wrestle for David Taylor at the M2 Training Center. I also wrestle at the NLWC, the Penn State Regional Training Center. Let's see. I have 5 brothers and sisters. We're all homeschooled. I've wrestled since I was a kindergartner. It's always been a part of my life. You know, I have a mom and a dad, and I'm super duper lucky to have them both, and they both are a really, really big part in my life. And I'm really grateful for this opportunity to you know, to interview people. And you know, me and my bud Sam started this podcast not only so we can talk to you guys, but also so we can express our love for wrestling and have a medium to do that. You know, other than that, there's not a whole lot more. There's always more, but
lots more. Our identity is, you know, always expanding and growing. One question. What made you become, or what made your parents homeschool you, and do you think it was, you know, it's not the correct decision, because I don't think there's really much as right and wrong and anything
right.
Like that, but like, do you think it was good, bad, ugly? What are your thoughts on it?
So, I don't really know the exact reason why my parents wanted to homeschool me. I think it's probably because they wanted to have a direct influence in my life, as opposed to sending me to school and having, you know, other people have a direct influence in my life. And so then they can raise me how the way they would like me to be raised.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, I think it's really great. You know, I get to sleep in, I get to do school in my pajamas. I just work hard. And once I get it all done, I can work on a podcast, or I can go to extra practices. You know, the only reason I can go to the NLWC on a, you know, Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock is because I'm a homeschooler, and I can have that freedom with my schedule.
Absolutely.
Also, I think it's great because I'm really, you know, I have a lot of friends, but it's not like I'm not tied down to any one school. I'm not tied down to, you know, any of that culture that comes with being at a school, and I'm not like obligated to do school activities and things like that. And you know, I also am free of a lot of that drama that comes with being in high school and stuff like that. And, and that's, it's actually a real comforting thing to know that I don't have to worry about what other people think and whether or not I'm cool or not, or whether or not other people care about me or stuff like that. Because I know I'm cared for, and I know I'm loved. And the amount of people who pour into me on a daily basis is the list is endless, practically. And just being able to appreciate that, I think, you know, my parents raising me with this attitude of being grateful and to make the most out of every situation is really the biggest thing I've learned from homeschooling. So I do think it's a good thing that I'm homeschooled.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, yeah, I literally even messaged this to, you know, a woman that was not hurting, whatever, but just, you know, was talking to me yesterday. And I was like, I truly think that gratitude is the foundation of, like, what life needs to be around. You know, obviously, like, there's the foundation of if you're religious or, you know, family or what, all those like answers that we normally reach to. But I like think at the end of the day, like if you can be grateful for anything and everything in life, right? And I think a lot of like religions do teach that very well, and a lot of sports teach that well, where it's like life is sacrifice and suffering. You are going to have to sacrifice something, and you either get to pick what you want to sacrifice or the world will pick it for you.
Right.
And if the world picks it for you, you might not like the outcome as much, right? But if you're picking the sacrifices and you're going through it and you understand that like life is going to be suffering and like you're going to have to, you know, pick up your daily cross or pick up whatever you want to believe in, but like you are going to have to pick it up and you are going to have to have sacrifice and you're going to have to deal with suffering. And through those two things, if you can be grateful for everything and like become so much more purposeful, and life becomes so much more meaningful to people. And when that happens, then we start putting our worth into things that actually matter. Like you said, like you feel that these people are pouring into you, right? They're pouring love and support and things like that are actually into you, because those are the things that actually matter, right? Like relationships and people believing in you and people being loyal and loving you are what truly matter. Being cool at school or having a lot of money or whatever, right? All those things are fun, but they're infinite, they're bottomless, they're whatever you want to say, right? Like if you're chasing money, you're chasing infinity. Good luck finding the end.
Yeah.
So it's like we have to put our identity in these pillars that are, you know, built on solid foundation. And I think wrestling teaches that. I think, you know, having good people in your life teaches that. And that's where, you know, I ultimately, like you said, I'm so thankful that my parents are together as well. And I said this yesterday, actually, kind of weird. I had a realization that I almost only have married couples in my entire immediate family. I have my grandparents were still together. My parents are still together. And all my aunts and uncles, I think, except for one, are married. And I'm like, what the heck? It dawned on me. And I'm like, whoa, like, no wonder why like my life has been so based around like these loving family marriages and like good, you know what I mean? And like people say so many negative things about it sometimes. I'm like, oh man, you really think it's that bad, or you think this? And then I'm like, whoa, of course they think it's that bad. That's all they've seen. All I have seen is, you know, love through, I don't know, a lot of stuff. And it blew my mind yesterday. And I just got hit with a wave of gratitude once again.
Yeah.
And it was special.
And so also like being grateful for things, it really is the jumping off point for being joyful in things. And whether it's, you know, hardships or whether it's, you know, everything's going well, like, cause that's what life's going to do. It's going to go up and down, and you're going to have high points and you're going to have low points, but learning to be grateful and to be joyful consistently is something that, it's not given to you. People aren't naturally joyful. In fact, I would say a lot of people, they like complaining about stuff. But you know, to be joyful in all situations is, it's a skill, but it's mostly a blessing, you know, to be able to look at something that maybe is too big for just you. And maybe you have to reach out, whether it's to, you know, God or to a friend or something. But being joyful in all situations is it's a very, very good thing.
Yeah, it is. And like you said, I don't know if it's something that we work for, if it was just given to us. But either way, I'm going to believe that we can work for it and get there as well. And through the blessings of it being given to us by whatever you want to say, or by your parents or whatever. But there's also, I don't know, I think you have to work for it too. And once you do work for joy and gratitude, good things do happen.
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. All right. that was awesome. Let's, I say we, let me jump a little further down this list. And, okay. Bryce, what was the first really big tournament you ever went to? Like competed in?
So if you're from like the like my area, it's like the Rocky Mountain Nationals of type of events, and they have like, you know, like 10 tournaments or whatever now. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, I remember we went to that one as one of the big ones or whatever. And it's kind of actually hilarious. My parents said they would allow me to dye my hair blonde on top, right? I did this back when I was like a young kid.
Yeah.
They said they would allow me to dye the top of my hair blonde if I placed at the tournament, and I didn't. And I didn't place the first time I was there. And I was really sad or whatever. But then I think, you know, shortly afterwards, we went to another big one and I got it done. But yeah, that was one of the big first ones, you know. And then, you know, within like a year or whatever, you're almost winning them. And then same thing with like the Tulsas, right? The first time I went to Tulsa Kickoff and Tulsa Nationals, I didn't place. And I was like, wow, dude, the dudes are so good. And then the next year I'm getting like second place, second and third. I got second a lot in my life, if we're going to be honest. And then same thing happened with Nationals, right? Or like when I went to college, my freshman year, I didn't even qualify for the NCAA tournament. Next year, second at Nationals. So it's kind of, it's kind of how it's now that I'm thinking about it, especially with how you asked that, it's kind of how it's kind of like the story of my life. I think I see the level and then I'm like, whoa, you're not there. And then let's get there. And then I do a pretty good job at getting close to the top of that level. But,
When did you realize that you had Division I like aspirations? When did you know that you wanted to wrestle for, you know, NC State and then like Wyoming?
I think when I was like 12 or 13 and I was pretty, you know, successful and doing all right. I remember I told my mom, I said, if I'm not Division I, I'm not wrestling. And she was like, why would you say that? Like, that's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know where you are, like you still got a long ways to go or whatever. She was like, you know, maybe you have to do this. And I just was like, no, like if I'm not D1, I will never wrestle. And it's like, it's probably not the best mindset, but it's also like a very hungry mindset, right? Where it's like, yo, if I'm not going to be competing to like try to be the best, I'm not going to be doing it. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I guess, that's kind of how it went for me.
Man. So, okay. Who do you think played like the biggest role in your growth as a wrestler?
I mean, I guess like ultimately, like probably my dad, you know. My dad he kept me very grounded, right? So like, I think, right? So this is like one of my like pet peeves, and I do this with people all the time or whatever, but it came straight from my dad, right? So I remember when I was like, you know, 13, 14, when you're in junior high, you're getting like a little bit cooler or whatever you're doing, right? I remember I got beat by a kid, and I go off the mat and I go, yeah, but I would F that kid up in a fight. My dad was like, okay, one, you know, when you're mad, you say things that you shouldn't be saying anyway. But, and he goes, okay, first thing, don't say that. And then he goes, the next thing, he goes, that dude just whooped you for 7 minutes, and now you think that you're going to beat him up in a fight? And I was like, yeah, whoop him. I'll whoop him. And he was like, dude, why would you even like lie to yourself like that? You know what I mean? Like, you just got whooped for 6 minutes. Like, you just had the opportunity to whoop him and you didn't. And I think like little things like that, and like him just being almost like a very like realistic. He's, you know what I mean? I think we're more like realistic than optimistic before, but not optimistic before realist, you know? And like when he did that, it just kept me very like grounded in that kind of idea where it's like, yo, if you want to be tough, go prove that you're tough then. Don't sit here and talk about it. Don't cry after you lose and sit there and pout for 2 days. Like, just become better, right? Like, belief is in actions, not in words. Mm-hmm. So, and I catch a lot of college kids doing it all the time. And it's like, you know, oh, what do you want to be? Oh, I want to be a national champ. Okay, what did you do the last 2 years? You know, I just kind of went through the motions. Okay, so what do you want to be? I want to be a national champ. It's like, do you though? Like, you're not doing anything to prove that. You know what I mean? And that's like, I've even kind of caught myself a little bit, because like just naturally you do say those things where people are like, oh, what are your goals? I'm like, well, of course, like eventually to be a world champion. But like I did a little interview with Rob Gore, who's the Ohio State social media guy, he came in last week or whatever, and he was like, he's like, so what's your freestyle goals? And I was like, to win some matches. I was like,
yeah,
like I haven't even had many matches yet. You know what I mean? And like, I have to, I pull myself back to like, you know, that mindset where like, of course I want to be a world team member and of course I want to be a world champion, but it's like,
it's
better
baby steps. Yeah.
Yeah. You better crawl before you walk. Right.
Yeah.
Like, don't talk this big game. I just don't like when people talk big game is really, one of my pet peeves, and it probably came from my dad. And I know that's not like a direct, but it was kind of a different way to answer other than like, oh, I had these coaches that, you know, taught me so much about wrestling. You know, my Bryce Linhart, who was my junior high and high school coach, who was around a 12er in college or whatever, but he was a small 25 pounder. So he had to learn how to wrestle around big guys, right? Because he wasn't strong enough and big enough. And I think that's where I ended up getting so much of my knowledge about like how to, I don't know, scramble, I guess, right? Because it's like a different way to look at, because like sometimes you're just not strong enough to just hit double legs and pick people up and slam them.
Yeah.
Like, how are you beat them without it? And I think like, you know, he taught me that, and he, you know, taught me so much about like wrestling positions. But then like, you know, there's my dad and my other coaches. So I don't know. It's such a hard question because you're always leaving so many people out that so much credit.
No, yeah. But, trying to give credit to where credit's due, it's difficult.
Everywhere but me, right? Like
yeah.
Credit is everyone except me. I was just a product of all their hard work and people believing in me and putting me in the right place.
Mm-hmm. So Bryce, what was one win or loss, like all throughout your career, but like either one win or one loss that really had a really big impact on your wrestling and your mindset towards the sport?
So I'm gonna try not to like just do like the NCAA finals or anything like that. So the
if that's the right answer, then you know you can say it.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's like, I think some of that is also just dealt because of the all the social pressure that's put on to that one single match. You know, there's like so much into it that it's like, oh, that's the most important. But it's like, maybe that's not the most important match. It was just the most important to everyone that can see it, right? So maybe it's more important for them than it actually is me. I think my sophomore year, right, when I didn't qualify my freshman year or whatever, and then I was going into my sophomore year, and I went up to 141, and that was when I was at Wyoming, you know, and I was really trying to, like, you know, I had a good feeling about the year. I was really trying to prove myself and all this kind of stuff, and I wrestled, his name's Anthony Abedin, and he was a Nebraska guy. I think he was a round of 12er a couple times, maybe an All-American once. I can't really remember, and I wrestled him, and I just beat him up, man. And I major decisioned him. Now that was like my first match. He was like ranked, I don't know, probably 10th in the country or whatever. And that was like one of my first few matches at 141. And like when that happened, I remember like I went back behind the Nebraska bleachers or whatever. And it like, I had a realization where I'm like, yo, like you are like, you're the man, like you're good enough. Like you can do this. Right. And it was like from that point on where like, from that match on, I truly believe that I could have won nationals that entire year. And obviously, I was like a 14 seed and like all these other things. And so like a lot of people, it was like a huge surprise to them. And obviously, it was a little bit of a surprise to me as well, because until you do it, you don't know how possible it is to make the NCAA finals or whatever. Right. But like, it wasn't that surprising. Like, I was like, dude, I could beat all these guys. Like, it just clicked in my head that it's like, I don't mean it this way, but in my head, in, you know, your little ego minds that you have to have, I literally was just like, people aren't good at wrestling. Like, maybe I'm not that good either, but they're just not good at wrestling, and they're not going to beat me. And it's total BS, right? Like, they're incredible at wrestling. But it's weird. I just kind of had that realization, and, you know, hopefully I have another one on the freestyle circuit.
Yeah. Wow.
Hopefully it comes. But, yeah.
That's a really, really, really cool story. So here's a question. We're coming down on time, but
yeah,
it's a tough one. So what changes did you make between your first NCAA finals appearance, so as a sophomore, and then your between then and your second one, so when you were a senior? What kind of after you lost, what changes did you make to have to get back up to the finals?
Yep. So I think my senior year, the things that changed the most was I committed to head blocking and down blocking a little bit more than I did in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not, I mean, it's no secret, right? Like I let people in on my legs more than I want to, but a lot of times it's just because I'm being overly offensive. Like I'm not somebody that just like stands out there with my leg out there. Like, yeah, grab it. But people do get on my legs quite often. So if you look to my senior year at Nationals, I don't even think I got into a scramble except if they started it. Right. So like if you watch Yanni's match, I shoot in on a single leg in the first period. I'm coming up to finish it. He dives and rolls at my ankles. Right. So then he's the initiator of that one. And then the last one where I shoot in and I get in on a high crotch and then he initiates a scramble. So it was like you can watch all five of my matches and I didn't initiate a scramble one time. I don't even think I got in that many because I was head blocking, I was down blocking. I freaking got stitches twice in the same tournament because I was doing that. So, I mean, that's like one part of my wrestling that I think, and I mean, still to this day, like, you know, I keep like joking around as I run around the NJRTC, but like, and I tell people this, I'm like, yo, I'm learning how to sprawl. And they're like, what? And I'm like, I'm learning how to sprawl. I'm going to cover people's heads and I'm going to be heavy because I would always just kind of be light and go over the top. So it's like, it's kind of a joke, but that was one of the biggest changes. And then I think really just my senior year, I think like, not that I ever had I would never party or anything like that during season ever, you know, like in my college career, but I think I just even like slowed my social life back a little bit. I have a girlfriend that believed in me my senior year, which like was different than my sophomore and junior year, I felt. So I think like little things like that kind of like, it's probably got to help, right? Like there's no doubt that like relationships are emotionally like heavy on you and they cause you a lot of drama and stuff like that. So I think my senior year, you know, I had a girlfriend that we actually like believed in each other and it worked. Compared to my sophomore and junior year, I was in, you know, a relationship that just was young and dumb. And I mean, even my junior year, like something happened where, you know, I caught my girlfriend doing something that she shouldn't have been a week before Big 12s my junior year. So it's like, you don't really want to be dealing with that kind of stuff, you know, at that time of the year. And, you know, I forgive everybody and everybody. Like, I understand that like relationships are just hard and people are flawed and they're going to make mistakes. So it wasn't a huge deal, but it's there and it matters. So I think that helped too, because like I said, I've always had so much support on the family and friends and coaches, and that like never wavers ever, you know what I mean? But there's certain things with relationships and social things that you just got to keep in check sometimes.
Yeah. All right. No, you're really so right. Okay. So, all right, we got like 5 minutes and then we gotta stop. But so a little bit back, we interviewed Johnny DeJulius, who actually set us up with this interview. So you're good buds with him, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. When did you
Shout to JDJ.
When did you meet him? How did you guys become friends?
I'm not 100% sure, honestly, but like I think it was in Vegas, like the first time I really ever ran into him. It was like my freshman year at Cliff Clean Vegas or whatever. And I felt like he just kind of like had a good energy to life or whatever. And I just like said, what's up? Like, right. I'll talk to anybody and everybody. Like, I'll talk to like the dudes that I'm about to wrestle. Like, I really just don't care that much. I'm just a very outgoing social guy. And I think we started talking a little bit and then we just kind of vibed out and it was, you know, kind of fun or whatever. And then a couple other times we see each other. And then I think just like slowly but surely, we just realized that like we both have this like burning desire for living life, right? I wrote this in one of my posts or whatever, but like one of the only things I truly take like pride in my life is like the fact that like I love living life. Like like I just love doing stuff, and I love trying to like push it and, you know, do, you know, more adrenaline based things, right? And I think we both like we gravitate towards those types of things. And obviously he's like made such a personality, literally based off just like being an adrenaline junkie. And I think it's been really cool for him, because he obviously has skydiving, which is like so visually pleasing to, you know, people to watch, like just watch somebody jump off a 500-foot bridge. You're like, what is going on? Right. It's like, I think he's really cool in that sense. And then he's also he's just down for life. He's down for a good time. You know, it's as simple as like, we barely even hung out, right? Like we've hung out two or three times. And right, I know you said like, well, it was our first time hanging out, but like we hung out two or three times. It was really fun. We went and jumped off some cliffs, did some cool stuff. But literally we were two or three interactions in with each other, and we just decided to go to Europe for 10 days. And we just went.
That's right.
Yeah, we went to Iceland. We went to France. We went to Spain. We ran with the bulls. We bungee jumped. We did this canyoneering where like go down these beautiful 300-foot canyons and jump off of like water and rappel and all this, like, you know, just like really incredible things. And we didn't even really realize until like halfway through the trip, we're like, bro, we haven't even really hung out. Like, we don't even really know each other.
But yeah.
It's just like fam. Like, it's just love from the jump. And you know, I think kind of like I said, like I've been very fortunate in my life that I just find incredible people that want to do incredible things with me all the time. Like, I don't have a lack of friends. I have, you know what I mean? Like, I have too many friends, it seems like. And I don't know what is credited to that other than just trying to love life with people is all.
No, that's really, really cool. Johnny told us a little bit about the Iceland trip when you guys snuck into the it, like a bathhouse type thing?
Yeah, it was like a blue
hot springs.
Like, yeah, it's a hot spring, and it's like all blue tinted and all this kind of stuff. And that was such a trip, right? Like, it was so funny that we got caught and everything was bad and we had to pay the $100 and all this kind of stuff. And then later that night, we ended up finding this natural one, and we ran up this little valley in this mountain, and we find these two Icelandic people that are sitting in this little natural one that's like, it's glacier water right next to you, and then there's rocks around it that there's a little hot spring. Yeah. And it was 12:30 at night, but it's still daylight there because it's so far north in the summer. And we're sitting in this glacier river in a natural hot spring, and we're just like, this is so much cooler than that stupid blue lagoon. Blue lagoon was fun because we ended up getting in trouble. So like, there's a fun story to it now.
Yeah.
But like, ultimately, just, I don't know, man. Sometimes like that touristy stuff just kind of stinks because you got to pay $100 and you go sit in a bathtub with 100 people.
Yeah. That's exactly what Johnny said. He's like, this is so much better than that blue lagoon.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, we just have a lot of incredible times. I wish that we could. Our schedules just kind of keep missing, though. It sucks because like we've been wanting to plan some other trips or whatever, but it's either I have a clinic or he has a clinic, or I have to go train this way and he has to go this way. But like we always say, like whoever wants to come is always welcome to come. Like,
yeah,
we just like doing cool stuff.
That's awesome. All right, Bryce, can you leave us with one last thought before we gotta go?
One last thought. All right. I always say this, right? It's kind of like my little motto, or whatever, but just try to live life golden. And, what that truly means is like, you know, when you're around people that do the right things and they're kind to people and they, have a love for life and a love for truth and all these types of things, they truly have a glow about them. They seem, they walk in the room and people like kind of start watching that person and they're like, what's he about to do next? Or like, you can just feel people gravitate towards that type of energy. And to me, like, that's one aspect of what like being golden truly means. And so when I tell you guys that. There's other aspects of it too that we could always dive into, but I'll just give you the short one right now. But to just live life golden and truly try to be a golden light in everybody's lives that you can, because at the end of the day, none of this matters. The only thing that truly matters is like how you make people feel and how you are to people. So I don't care about how many matches you win. I don't care about how much money you have. You know, those are always cool. But if you have that golden light about you, then like that's what it really matters.
Wow. No, that was awesome. Christ, you're the man, dude. Listen, we got through like six questions. There's so much more to go through and talk about. And bro, we're 100%. You're going to have to come back on again.
Absolutely, bro. Anytime.
Yeah, but we're out of time right now. So huge shout out to Bryce Meredith. Huge shout out to Johnny DeJulius for setting this up. Thank you guys both. And I'm late for practice. So I will.
Yeah. I'll tell David you're doing it with me. All right.
All right. I will. All right. I'll talk to you later, Bryce.
All right, bro. Thank you so much.
And thank you guys for listening.